This is the Talking Newspaper for Friday, the 17th of January, 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending 17th of January 2014. And this week it's been edited by Bill Argles, Jean Gardner and Irene Dowding. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now the main headlines this week are Drama on the Number 67, Man Rescued as Fire Engulfs City Flat, and They Saved My Life, says Fire Rescue Man. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please? Shirley.
Drama on the Number 67. Dozens of people fled a packed bus after fire broke out in the engine on a country road near Winchester. Within minutes, it was engulfed in flames and reduced to a charred wreck as dozens of passengers stood by and watched. Eastleigh-based operator Velvet ordered an urgent review of five similar vehicles in its fleet. The bus driver has been praised for his quick thinking after the single-decker caught fire in Martyrworthy at about 7:45 a.m. on Monday. The driver of the 67 bus, Matt Stubbs, used an extinguisher but was beaten back by the flames. Passenger Mark Rowe said, "One of the students came forward and said there was smoke. I thought she had said someone was smoking on the bus, but then the driver pulled over and asked everybody to get off. He asked for my help, but it wasn't easy because I was a bit panicked myself. But the driver was very good. He kept everyone calm. Then, next thing, there were flames coming from the back of the bus." Mr. Rowe, 36, of Grange Road, Oxford, added, "The driver was brilliant, and I'm glad he acted as quickly as he did. I'm also pleased the student came forward so quickly, because if she hadn't, then God knows what would have happened." Villager Liza Hughes said, "I'd been lying in bed when I saw black billowing smoke. By the time I got there, the firefighters were trying to get underneath to put out the fire. It looked very dramatic, completely burnt out. And there were a lot of people waiting across the road. I don't think anyone was hurt." Police closed the road in both directions at Couch Green and at the Trout Pub while the fire was tackled, causing long tailbacks at rush hour. Alton Fire Station manager Matt Palmer said of Mr. Stubbs, "He did exactly the right thing, but couldn't do anything more and so called for assistance." Two appliances attended, one from Winchester and one from Oxford. They then fought the fire using four breathing apparatus and two hose reels. Velvet arranged for the 45 stranded passengers to be collected by another bus shortly after the fire had been extinguished. Managing Director Phil Stockley said, "The vehicle was so badly damaged, I'm not sure we will be able to identify exactly what caused it, but we do know it started in the engine." Mr. Stockley said of the review, "We've brought the other buses in to make sure everything is in working order. All buses are inspected every 4 weeks, but we brought in the ones of the same batch to carry out additional checks." And here with this article, we've got three very dramatic-looking pictures in colour of this burned-out wreck of a bus, which one can hardly recognise as such.
And the second headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, man rescued as fire engulfs city flat. A man was rescued from his balcony as fire tore through his Winchester flat this week. Firefighters arrived to find him clinging on precariously some 35 feet above Jury Street. He suffered no injuries. An hour after his ordeal, Alex Mutilescu, 24, who works in the City Fish Bar and Kebab on Jury Street, told the Chronicle, "I'm very sad because I have lost everything I ever had. At 2:45 p.m, my girlfriend called me to wake me up to get ready for work at 3 p.m. I was going to go to the bathroom and heard the fire alarm. Then the owner of the wine shop was there because he heard the alarm and was trying to find out what was going on. Then I opened the door of number 5 and the fire was by the window. I ran back to my flat and called 999. Then I went to the balcony and then the fire brigade came and I was there 5 minutes. His girlfriend, Maria Dietsch, 21, a cleaner, sitting next to him, wept during the interview. Mr. Mitulescu was speaking in the Discovery Centre opposite shortly after giving a statement to the police. The drama started on Monday afternoon as fire ripped through the Delun buildings opposite the Theatre Royal. The cause is currently unclear. It's being investigated but is not believed to be suspicious. The alarm was raised and within minutes the emergency services were on the scene, sealing off Jury Street and bringing traffic chaos to the city, with tailbacks down to Friars Gate and the Broadway. The Theatre and Discovery Centre became makeshift bases for the emergency services. Firefighters in breathing apparatus used the lobby as a recovery area. At the height of the incident, there were 6 fire appliances and the aerial ladder platform. Passerby Liam Hill, 25, of Alsford, said, "I saw some bloke on the balcony at the front of the shop. There was smoke billowing out. He looked very distressed, clinging to the side of the balcony. Emergency services were here in seconds." Some 4 flats were affected by the blaze. 2 people were treated at the scene, but neither needed to go to hospital. The fire was put out by 40 firefighters from Alsford, Winchester, Basingstoke, Havant and St Mary's and Eastleigh. Another witness, who called the emergency services, told how he battled smoke. Jon Yuxell, 33, who works at the wine depot, the shop below Mr. Mitulescu's flat, said, "There was smoke coming through the door. I tried to open the door, and when I opened it, all the smoke came out, so I went back downstairs and called the police." Group manager Kevin Evanett of the fire service said, "We arrived to find a lot of smoke coming from the window and a man clinging to the balcony. Firefighters quickly pitched the ladder to reach the man and help him to safety. The speed of the response and their actions in reaching him undoubtedly helped to save this man's life. The early warning provided by his smoke alarm also helped him to escape onto his balcony before the fire took hold."
And a third headline story, please, Jane.
And this is continuing the fire drama in Jury Street. "They saved my life," says flat rescue man. The man rescued from a burning building has said he is lucky to be alive. After scaling the second floor balcony of his flat in Jury Street, Alex Mitulescu was saved by firefighters as flames and smoke ripped through the flat where he lived with his girlfriend Maria Dietsch. The 24-year-old Romanian has since praised the efforts of those who helped him, saying, "They saved my life." He said, "I was thinking when I was hanging there to find a way to jump down, but it was a bit high and I was afraid to jump. I saw everybody below me. My friends were saying, 'Come down.' I couldn't get back to my flat. I couldn't even see inside because it was full of smoke. I'm all right now. I'm just happy because nothing happened to me." It would seem that Miss Dietsch also had a lucky escape, with the fire starting just 45 minutes. As the strong smell of wood smoke clung to the air in Jury Street, the couple were setting about removing their personal items from the property. At first, it was believed their bedroom was ablaze, but later fire crews confirmed it had not actually been touched by the fire. Mr. Mitulescu appeared calm and reflective on Tuesday as he discussed the drama less than 24 hours before and spoke fondly of his friends who had done anything they could to help. "Everybody offered me to go to their place," he said. "People brought me clothes and food." Local businesses, including Computer Solutions and the Arts Cafe, were forced to shut on Monday, but opened for business as usual on Tuesday. Sarah Collinson, manager of the Arts Cafe, said, "We were the lucky ones. It didn't really affect us. We only had to shut for 2.5 hours. The wine depot, however, was closed on Tuesday as fire investigation crews continued to assess the damage to the middle section of the building. And the article is accompanied by several very vivid photographs of flames billowing from the rear of the flat and Alex Mitulescu clinging to the balcony, outside the balcony, above the road, with all the crowds and rows of fire engines watching.
And that concludes the headline stories. Now we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, chronicle comment, and first person. And I'll start with the death notices. Bespolka, Cameron Cruikshank Bespolka. Blampied, Dora Delgano Blampied. As Dora Delgano nay Bunny Blampied. Unexpectedly at the Royal Berkshire Hospital, Reading. And Farmer, Thomas Tom Farmer, peacefully at Flower Down Care Home, aged 86. Johnson, Alice Jean, nay Roe Johnson, peacefully aged 89 at Nether Wallop, Stockbridge. Leston, Richard Leston, suddenly aged 72. Marsh, Doreen Dawn Marsh, aged 101. Macmillan, Jane Jean Macmillan, peacefully at Countessman Batten House, aged 78. Morgan, Jean Elsie nay Alexander Morgan, peacefully. Russell, Philip Russell, suddenly and unexpectedly at home in Olsford, aged 72. Summerbell, John Summerbell, peacefully aged 51. And Wilkinson, Charlie Wilkinson, peacefully, just peacefully. I'm going to go on to Christian comment, read by Shirley.
And this one is headed, Beloved Uncle Would Be Chuffed at Such a Turnout. And it's written by Rosemary A. Baker. My bags are almost packed. It's amazing what is needed for 2 nights away and to take a funeral. I've had my hair cut and left instructions about the dogs and cat. I have a selection of suitable clothes and my gown. I hope my mother would be proud of me. My sister and I are travelling halfway this evening with one of my brothers and his wife en route to my uncle's funeral tomorrow in Darlington. My uncle never married, but all his nephews and nieces, except one, who is abroad, are intending to be there with husbands and wives and some children. They have all sent me memories on Facebook, which I doubt if he would have understood, but he would be chuffed at the turnout. Something else he would have been amazed at is that his service is to be taken by 3 medical doctors. Myself, an ordained psychiatrist, my cousin, an anaesthetist, and her husband, an orthopaedic surgeon, who will play the organ. All in his family. He, my mother, and her siblings came from very humble origins, and he himself was a steel worker. Actually, you don't have to be ordained to take a funeral, or even a Christian, as of course there are people of other faiths, or no faith, who need to be buried. We weren't really certain about my uncle's beliefs, as nobody had actually discussed his death with him. He was brought up as a Christian and attended other family burials and cremations before ill health prevented him. Our main clue that he wanted a Christian funeral came from a chance remark made to my father, who had said he was hanging on for my ordination so I could do his funeral, to which my uncle replied in broad Yorkshire, "Yes, our Rose can see me as well." What was very healing for us as a family was pooling our ideas in preparing the service together, albeit via email and Facebook. We ourselves come from 3 denominations, Methodist, Roman Catholic, and Anglican, and some don't attend church at all. Also, our experience of life and, for that matter, death are very different. Hopefully, what we have put together will be acceptable to all, for a funeral service is for the living as well as the dead, and would have made him proud, as well as sending him on his final journey, secure in our love for him and the treasured memories we all hold of him. The gospel reading we have chosen is from John chapter 14, where Jesus tells us, "My Father's house has many mansions, and he goes to prepare a place for us." This is what Christians believe, whether we have much faith or only a small amount.
And now we're going on to letters to the editor. Now, if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. You can also email them at news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at number 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. And we'll start with the first letter, read by Noel.
Yes, Jackie Porter writes about counting the cost of winter storms. "Sir, after the dreadful storms of recent weeks, it is time to reflect on what our national priorities should be. Thanks to the brave people who worked in the stormy conditions, electricity was restored to the majority of the area within 48 hours. Excuse me. Unfortunately, some residents still had to endure more days without power. Compensation is due to all of us who were without power, and no doubt overtime will be paid. Working hours were lost as travel to and from work was delayed. Every storm has an enormous hidden cost to the economy. When insurance companies pay out and we have less in our pockets as we swallow the cost of the wasted food in our freezers and fridges. The company that powers the infrastructure must consider how to avoid this power cut on such an enormous scale happening again. And the government must surely reconsider what is important to keep this country moving. So, I shall be campaigning for railway companies to keep tracksides clear and well maintained, and for more underground cabling in areas where trees are an important feature of the landscape. The initial outlay might be greater, but in the end, it may save us all money and inconvenience. If any of your readers would like to join this campaign, they can add their power cut to the survey at www.jackieporter.co.uk. That's www.jackieporter.co.uk. Jackie Porter, County Councillor and Lib Dem prospective MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford Main Road, Itchen Abbas.
I neglected to say that we've actually got 13 letters this week, and the second one is read by Jane.
And this is from Mike Marks and is called "Making Maggie Seem Like a Saint." "Sir, regarding a piece in the Chronicle on benefits, caps or cuts are harsh, sanctions brutal. So far, over 2 million have been sanctioned, often for no reason, resulting in poverty, food banks, evictions, even suicides. If you take 2 weeks' money from someone, how does that help them find work? This government makes Thatcher look like a saint." And that is from Mike Marks, Wynn Road, Southampton.
And this one, headed "Kingsworthy Can't Take More Housing," and it's from Tim Brown of Kingsworthy. "Sir, I've lived with my family in Kingsworthy for 20 years and have seen a great deal of house building. Whilst I have no problem with change, I do feel that a line has to be drawn somewhere. I refer to plans to build yet more housing in Kingsworthy when there is inadequate infrastructure to support it, especially roads and parking. My major concern is the top field site off Hookpit Farm Lane, which has seen a great deal of housing built on its periphery. During our time here, we have seen so much development that it's beginning to resemble a small town, but without the necessary infrastructure. What consideration has been given to school places? Will there be enough? Or will children have to travel outside their catchment areas, adding to the high volume of traffic entering and exiting Hookpit Farm Lane to Springvale Road by the dreaded Tesco Corner? After the recent rains, There are already problems with drainage, and large amounts of water stay on the roads for long periods. I can only see this getting worse. What surveys have been carried out that can prove the sewage system can cope? Are we to go back to the flooded roads of previous years? As an ex-army officer whose children were brought up here, the value of open country spaces to exercise on, picnic, explore, pick wild flowers, walk dogs, and see wildlife can't be understated. After the failures of objections to just about every other recent building proposal, I can only hope common sense will prevail with regard to the top field site. Tim Brown, MBE, Furze Crescent, Kingsworthy.
Peter Rees says it's time to elect real local politicians. Sir, the meeting last week demonstrated exactly how little consideration either Conservatives or Liberal Democrats on the City Council actually care about the people they represent. Both parties nodded through a rent rise which will eventually equate to about 7-8% for the majority of tenants. This decision was taken in the face of a £2 million new homes bonus, a windfall that could have been used to ensure a much less drastic increase, for there were no strings attached to its use. This has been done in other local authorities to mitigate such huge rent rises and the effect of the bedroom tax. The council is in disarray. When the overall economic situation has leached £19 million out of the Hampshire economy, where dependency on food banks continues to rise and there are over a million under the age of 18 out of full-time work, what happens in this council? The next meeting of Cabinet is cancelled because there's nothing to discuss. River Park is another example of its ineptitude. The consultation has been a complete shambles. With Tesco holding the council to ransom because they have an outline planning application for over 300 homes adjacent to Bar End, and with the leader of the Lib Dems agreeing with the Conservative proposals for redevelopment on the existing site, it's no wonder that people in Winnell and Highcliffe are dismayed about the total lack of credible consultation. This is another example of decisions taken to suit the council and elected members, not the population. River Park is not the most appropriate site for rebuilding, redesigning or extending the leisure centre. However, people will not get a chance to decide what is best, and redevelopment will go ahead because of the planning gain elsewhere. It is time for everyone to ensure they get the truth from their representatives, to condemn this politically inept administration and elect real local politicians who represent their community. Peter Rees, Chairman, Winchester Labour Party. Monarch Way, Winchester.
And Rodney Skinner writes that Hampshire is the spit of Helmand. Sir, about 3 years ago, the commander of RAF Odium spoke at a meeting in Alresford and explained why they flew their Chinook so low over Hampshire. Hampshire Chronicle, January the 9th. Take away the trees and the terrain is the same as Helmand province in Afghanistan. The pilots need the practice in flying low and safe. Do not think I am one of those who complained. I was not. Yes, we all have a moan about low-flying aircraft at times, but it does not happen at a regular basis, and not usually after midnight. Rodney Skinner, Town Close, Ropley, Alresford.
And this from Sarah Robinson, headed, UK had no role in European dream. Sir, I was surprised to read Mr. Grant's opinion that we should be a leader in Europe, Chronicle, January 2nd. He states that we helped form it. Excuse me for pointing out that, actually, we did no such thing. It grew out of the European Coal and Steel Organization set up in 1951. The six countries were, in fact, West Germany, France, Italy, Netherlands, Luxembourg and Belgium. This organisation, along with the European Economic Community, known as the Common Market, and the Euro Atomic Authority, all merged and became the EEC in 1967. We did not join until 1973. Am I surprised that a few facts should get in the way of a Liberal Democrat's stream of consciousness? No, I am not. Re the neglected Wales Street garden. Could I ask Mr. Pott to get out his secateurs and tidy it up himself, possibly with the aid of a few friends? Can nobody DIY anymore? Sarah Robertson, Old Station Road, Itchen Abbas.
Thelma Ash writes that hospital smoking must be banned. Sir, so hospitals are being urged to stop people smoking in their grounds. I would have thought they should be told, not asked. I remember the first time I saw people smoking outside the main doors at a hospital. I was amazed. The air was full of smoke and the main doors were open, so it was drifting inside. I was once discharged from hospital on a cold April evening. As I was leaving, another patient left the ward. As she was only in a nightie and a thin dressing gown, I was surprised to see her go down in the lift. I presumed she was going to one of the shops. Imagine my surprise when I went through the main doors to see her standing there smoking. My first thoughts were pathetic, and then I wondered what she was being treated for. Not a chest complaint, I hope. Thelma Ash, Bishopstoke.
And A.P. Lodge writes that the Christmas market is not good for the city. Sir, it's time our councillors and the cathedral faced up to the very real issue of safety at the Christmas market. All entrances are very narrow and unsuitable for crowds of the magnitude seen last month. If it was taking people 10 minutes to get out, what would happen in an emergency that required rapid evacuation of the area? Indeed, a cathedral volunteer expressed the opinion to me that there would be panic and serious injuries. Apart from the safety angle, there's the effect on local people of such crowds. Two friends of mine from Romsey and Weymouth tried to visit the market, but got stuck in gridlock traffic and could find no parking anywhere, so had to turn round and go home. How is this good for the image of Winchester? It seems the ones who like it best, the cathedral and council and the shops, have a vested interest. Understandable, perhaps, but now out of hand. Meanwhile, I avoid Winchester for the whole of December and do my shopping in Romsey instead. It's so much more civilised. And that was AP Lodge, Takedown Meads, Winchester.
This one from Mike Biden, headed Stop Blaming the EU for All Our Ills. Sir, Mr. Stewart, Chronicle, January 9th, has clearly been in the pub with Nigel Farage. Crying into their beer pots, they heap opprobrium on the EU as the scapegoat for all our ills. It is not the EU that has given some of our youth a dismal outlook on their prospects. It is people like Mr. Stewart and UKIP with their incessant negativity. Most youngsters see Europe as a land of opportunity. Indeed, 1.4 million Britons work in the EU, earning more and enjoying a higher standard of living. My son is one, working for a software company in Berlin, living in an apartment he could never afford in London, with a better balance between work and leisure, and a cost of living significantly cheaper. There are many I know in Winchester with a close relative working in Europe, enjoying a great life. Many elderly also see it as an opportunity, their preferred place to retire or a holiday destination of choice. Only the blinkered and unimaginative remain at home without a job or in the pub blaming the EU. Over 300,000 a year leave the UK, and many are youngsters. Good luck to them, I say. With the UK in Europe, we are all so much better off, and it's amazing that so many cannot see the wood for the trees. Mike Biden, Northbrook Close, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
Developer should provide assurance, says Paul Oakley White. Sir, your editorial on January the 9th referred to the risks of flooding to new homes. In this regard, an assurance from Carla Holmes that its development at Barton Farm will not increase such risks to Winchester and the surrounding area should be sought. Paul Oakley White, Berwick Road, Winchester.
And from Nina Bailey, City's character and charm forfeited. Sir, can Winchester really be one of the best places to live? Not for much longer, I suspect. What with the systematic erosion of the charm and character of the city centre due to the high street market stalls and the ghastly crammed-in developments in previously lovely gardens, how much longer will it merit any distinction? And that was Nina Bailey of Berwick Avenue in Winchester.
And David Selby says, keeping dry in the new bus station. Sir, when I read about possible modifications to the bus station in the new Silver Hill development, Chronicle, January 9th, I recalled waiting for my bus in Winchester bus station last week at 4 p.m. with over 50 people, also waiting undercover out of the rain. I hope the new bus station will provide more than adequate undercover waiting provision for what we hope will be more and more passengers. David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wunston.
More empty shops doesn't make sense. Sir, we will, I suppose, have to reconcile ourselves to the lower part of our city becoming Binchester. But the creation of a further 30 shops seems to be the height of folly. It would be nice to think that they will be owned by the developer, but I believe they are to be owned by the poor council taxpayers of the city. There are always empty shops, and I suspect we have already as many charity shops as any city of comparable size. We have also a reasonable selection of multiple stores. Any new ones are likely to be in competition with them. There is admittedly a need for a replacement for Sainsbury's, but 29 tourist traps seems excessive. Have the planners thought why Waitrose and Aldi were established on the fringes? Sainsbury's Badger Farm store is no longer a grocer, but has nearly as wide a range of stock as John Lewis at West Quay. Have they taken account of the plans to reduce inner-city parking? Have they not observed the growth of online shopping? I appreciate the importance of tourism, but cannot accept that 29 more empty shops will make any contribution to the city's coffers. W.A.C. Halliwell, St. James's Villas, Winchester.
And that was the last of the letters to the editor. Thank you to all of our contributors. And now it's time for your say. Passers-by in the Winchester area were asked, should the private lives of public figures be anyone else's business? Jane has the replies.
And the first reply came from Chloe Witcheller, aged 17, a Sparshot College student of Hairstock, who said, it's up to them what they do. I wouldn't take any interest in their private lives. I don't think it's anyone else's business. George Helke, 77, retired of Edgar Road, Winchester, said, it's not exactly our business, but it can help us to get an idea of their character. You can only understand what they do in public if you can gauge more about them privately. William Mack, 51, prison custody manager of Chandler's Ford, said, their morals and home life should be examined. If I'm paying for someone to earn $70,000 a year, I'd want to know that they're not alcoholics, for example. And Helen Riseborough, 59, a family psychotherapist of Winchester, said, no, because private lives are too complicated for the media to recall properly. It irritates me. They take a complex matter about people's personal relationships and make them too simple.
And now we're going to go back through the years for news items from our file, starting with 25 years ago, read by Shirley.
Right, 25 years ago, January 20th, 1989. And it's headed House Shortage Caused by Sales. The government-sponsored sale of council houses has forced Winchester City Council to offer families accommodation in property that was previously considered unsuitable. The right to buy policy has been popular among people living in houses in good repair, located in attractive areas. Properties sold tend to be the larger family homes. So, although families remain the biggest group on the waiting list, the number of suitable vacancies is decreasing, because properties have been sold. Many of the family homes which have been bought are under-occupied, while the council has no alternative but to offer families on the waiting list less suitable lettings. And then a slightly different subject here. Three successive mild winters have led to a sharp increase in Hampshire's rat population. Experts are quick to point out that numbers have not reached plague or epidemic proportions. Even so, Winchester's Environmental Health Department reports a 25% increase in requests to deal with rats. Rats pose a serious risk to health, as they can pass on Viles disease, a form of meningitis, which is often fatal. It is contracted from the animal's urine, and the germ stays alive longer in damp conditions. Rats were also responsible for damaging cables and wiring.
And Noel's going to take us back 50 years ago.
It's two items from January the 18th, 1964. The first, plan to sell off railway branch. News was given about the future of the Botley to Bishop's Waltham railway line at a meeting of the local branch of the National Farmers Union in Botley on Wednesday last week. British Railways, Southern Region, intimated that negotiations for the sale of the line from Wangfield to Bishop's Waltham to a private company had reached the advanced stage. The railway had been closed for 2 years and no trimming done, with the result that the line was becoming a wilderness. And the other item, the Hampshire County Council's scheme for the rehabilitation of the gypsy population was accepted by Romsey and Stockbridge Rural District Council on Monday, but with a rider that they strongly object to the site.
Back to 100 years ago with Jane.
And 100 years ago, on January the 17th, 1914, first a letter headed Pigeons to be Shot on Thursdays to the editor. Pigeons, pigeons, will you kindly help us through the medium of your valuable paper by stating that landowners and farmers in this district have arranged to shoot these pests every Thursday afternoon? If all interested will cooperate, we must lessen their numbers and perhaps scare them from this district. The second different article is Winchester City Bench. A labourer named James Kaplan, residing at 21 Upper Brook Street, was brought up charged on a warrant with assaulting the mayor, Councillor Harry Seely, at 5:15 the previous evening. He pleaded guilty and said he was sorry. The mayor stated that he was passing down Upper High Street when he saw a man having an altercation with a woman near the wicket gate. He stopped, being anxious lest something should happen, and just then a Mr. May came along. Shortly after, the prisoner rushed at them both. The mayor guarded off a blow with his umbrella. Police Constable Collier gave evidence of arrest, stating that the prisoner was under the influence of drink.
Finally, back 200 years ago, read by Shirley.
Right. January 17th, 1814. And this is convicted of two articles here. Stolen banknote traced to carrier. On Monday evening, William Wood, a letter carrier in the employ of the General Post and whose delivery was in the neighbourhood of Temple Bar, was brought to the public office, Bow Street, in the custody of Lavender, charged on suspicion of feloniously stealing a letter in the General Post Office, containing notes and bills to the amount of 1,201. A 1511 Bank of England note has been traced to the prisoner, which was given in exchange for a country bank note which the letter contained, and of which the prisoner was not able to give any account as to how he became possessed of it. He was committed for further examination. Secondly, a shocking instance of murder occurred in the parish of Camborne, Cornwall, on the night of the 1st of January. James Rule, a lunatic who had been confined in the poorhouse of that parish, for several years, found means to destroy a female pauper, supposedly by strangulation, who attended him and lived in the same apartment where he was chained.
And we're back to the present again, and Jane is now going to read the editorial comment.
And the editorial comment this week is a welcome boost for local business. Winchester may have avoided the worst of the 5-year recession with the rows of depressingly empty shops found in other towns, but you can never have enough good economic news. So reports that the City Council is investing £6 million in supporting start-up businesses are to be welcomed. The Council is looking to buy a property from which to launch an enterprise centre where fledgling firms can get started. It could support some 200 jobs. This can do nothing but good for nurturing the kind of businesses that may evolve into major players down the line. That Alsford and Bishop's Waltham will also be considered as locations is excellent, offering hope that those places will not simply evolve into dormitories for commuters and the elderly. There is another boost with Avalon House, after standing empty for years, being let to Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust for new offices. It is, however, sad to report that the Winchester City Residents Association has decided to fold. For 40 years, it provided an alternative voice and fought hard against many schemes. Some critics argue that they were a self-selecting group of unelected meddlers, but every town needs people to stand up for it.
Now, first person this week is by Khalid Aziz, and it's read by Noel.
Yes, Khalid Aziz says it's time to stop and stare and boost our cafe culture. The first decent day of the new year. After non-stop wind and rain, a perfect day. Gin-clear blue skies and a trip into Winchester. Amazingly not too busy for a Saturday. Parking was easily to be had in the centre, and there were some decent buskers in the pedestrianised high street. So good, in fact, that people were sitting down to form impromptu audiences, and for the musicians, the gratifying clink of coins. The sun was shining, and God was in his heaven. Wandering along, completing various messages, as the Scots say, for Mrs. Aziz, I spied an old acquaintance having coffee at a pavement table outside one of the newer coffee shops. I joined him for a swift Americano and chewed the fat for a bit before he had to rush off to ferry a child to a Saturday match. I stayed a little longer to finish my coffee, and what a treat that turned out to be. Having always been in a tearing rush whenever I hit the city, I can't remember the last time I took the time to simply sit and stare. It's just amazing that after more than 3 decades in one place, just how many people you know. Within minutes, a positive parade of familiar faces passed by, including a couple of souls whose faces I recognised but who furnished no other clues to identity. Of course, you smile sagely and pray they let a hint drop as to who on earth they might be. Others passed at a distance, recognised but not greeted. There'll be another time for chat. So in just 15 short minutes, I was reacquainted with familiar folks, many of whom I hadn't seen for years. These connections are somehow heartwarming. We humans are naturally gregarious and always seeking to connect. Such interactions are the glue of society, and without them we are diminished. I realise now that it's only when on holiday that I feel I have permission to sit at an open-air table. The problem is, as you nurse your café cognac abroad and take in the scene, you know that the chances of someone passing whom you know is very remote, so you're reduced to people-watching, which is not the same. The message is clear. Go to one of our county towns, Romsey, Winchester, Alsford, or you might consider Basingstoke, Southampton or Portsmouth. Settle yourself into the cafe of your choice on the main drag, outside if possible, and wait. All human life is there, or very shortly will be. It's taken me 30 years to realise what I've been missing. I shall be sure to make time when I next come to the big city. The days are getting longer. There'll be more gin-clear days and even, eventually, some hint of warmth. So, let's boost our cafe culture. Take the time to stop and stare. It will pay dividends.
And now we're on to this week's announcements. And we're going to start with a message from Claire Bell, the Membership and PR Officer of the charity Listening Books. Claire writes, We'd like to let your listeners know about the huge benefits of joining our library, including information about the great range of audiobooks that are available through the post on MP3 and CD. In addition, we have a fantastic download and streaming service accessible directly from our website, www.listening-books.org.uk. And this is continually updated with bestsellers and popular titles. Ours is a much-needed service for those who have enjoyed reading, but whose eyesight is worsening due to a condition such as macular degeneration or cataracts, and for those who are registered blind. The website again is www.listening-books.org.uk, or you can telephone Claire at telephone number 0207 407 9417. Or you can write to Claire Bell at 12 Lant Street, that's L-A-N-T, London, SE1 1QH. That's 12 Lant Street, London, SE1 1QH. Now let's look at what's on. Well, at theatre and on stage at the Theatre Royal Winchester, there's much a stew about nothing. I wonder what that's about. And that's on Wednesday, January the 22nd at 8 p.m. If you want more details, you can ring 01962 840 440. And then the Discovery Centre in Winchester, there's Barnstormers Comedy Night on Friday, January the 24th at 8 p.m. And then there's a children's concert Saturday, January the 25th at 11 a.m. In the Mayflower in Southampton, there's The Snowman, Tuesday to Saturday, January 21st to 25th, 7 p.m. and matinees are at 2 p.m. Wednesday and Thursday. No, that's wrong. It's 7 p.m. and matinees. It's 2 p.m. Wednesday and Thursday, and 2:30 Saturday. And then there's Barry Humphrey's Farewell Tour, Tuesday, January 28th to Saturday, February the 1st. But for more details about that, you can ring 023 8071 1811. Finally, at the Nuffield Theatre, Southampton, Sitting Pretty by the Maskers Theatre Company. That's Tuesday to Saturday, January the 21st to 25th. More details, 023 8067 1771. At the Theatre Royal in Winchester, there's I Do by Dante or Die. Yes, that's very complicated. An immersive pre-wedding drama performed in six rooms at the Holiday Inn Winchester. And that's from Friday the 7th to Sunday the 9th February 2014. Then there's On Landguard Point, directed by Robert Pacitti, a film about home. And that's Thursday, 27th of Feb at 7:30 p.m. And then there's Twelfth Night, Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, presented by Filter. And that's Monday the 3rd to Saturday the 8th, March 2014. Times are varying, so you better phone the box office number 01962 840 440 or go to their website, which is www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. For music lovers, there's guitar and harpsichord. Guitarist Amanda Cook will appear alongside harpsichordist Claire Williams at The Point in Eastleigh on January the 25th. The two will play a varied programme, including the work of Hampshire-based composer Vincent Lindsay Clark, plus Boccherini, Vivaldi and Dodgson, amongst others. And Amanda Cook has played several times on BBC Radio 3 In Tune programme, and her work is noted for its fluidity and sensitive musicality. When Williams, that's Claire Williams, has played with the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment and the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. Tickets cost £15 or £12 for concessions and are available from 023 8065 2333 or by visiting the website www.thepointeastleigh.co.uk. And finally, there's Leslie Joseph is back in Southampton. is a preview, Hot Flush, at the Mayflower Theatre. And it says about Leslie Joseph, Leslie Joseph has booked a return to the Mayflower Theatre this spring, fresh from success in the rejuvenated TV versions of Birds of a Feather and a festive stint at Robinson Crusoe and the Caribbean Pirates in Southampton. She will appear in naughty comedy musical Hot Flush. The show takes us on a journey which delves into the friendships, the secrets, the laughter and tears and the ups and downs of four ordinary women. The Girls' Night Out stars Myra, Leslie Joseph, Sylvia, Laurie Haley Fox, Helen, Anne Smith and Jessica, Ruth Keeling, a quartet of feisty women who get together every Tuesday night at the local bar to offer each other moral support, cry on one another's shoulders and malign the men on their lives or in their lives. 15 of them, all played by Matt Slack. Collectively referred to as the Hot Flush Club, Myra, Sylvia, Helen and Jessica will not leave a stone unturned or a story untold in the matters of relationships with the opposite sex and the menopause. Hot Flush will be at the Mayflower on Sunday, March the 23rd. To book, call 023 80 711 811, or go to www.mayflower.org.uk. And that's all of our what's on. So let's look at lighting up times. It's changing because the sun is coming up earlier, isn't it? It ends on Friday the 17th of January at 8:01 a.m. and begins at 4:30 p.m. On Wednesday 22nd of January, it ends at 7:76 a.m. and begins at 4:39 p.m. Now, if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty, because that might be the problem. Okay. So now, continue with further items of general news, starting with Jane, who's going to read us something from Belgarum Diary, I think.
That's right. Belgarum this week, the alternative look at the news, is seeing Winchester as a charitable city. If the Giving Tree appeal hadn't said it already, a new survey has proved Winchester is a very charitable place to live. BMI Sarum Road Hospital has conducted a survey which reveals 79% of us would donate unwanted items to charity, 69% of us would give money to charity, and 41% dedicate time to volunteer. Director of Nursing at BMI Sarum Road Hospital, Sharon Greasley, says it reveals some reassuring information about the community where we live and work. It's good to know residents across Winchester believe reaching out to others is still an important part of their busy lives. The survey also indicated Winchester patients cared more about staff rather than facilities, with 79% voting for the quality of staff over the cleanliness of where they would stay. Nursing was also the profession most associated with care, taking 58% of the vote, while healthcare professionals, including paramedics and GPs, received a mere 17 and 10% respectively. And amongst the charitable people, we have Charlotte Joins Homeopathy Campaign. A Hampshire-born TV personality has put her name to a homeopathy awareness campaign. Sky Sports presenter Charlotte Jackson, who spent much of her childhood in Wickham, has been painted and photographed to show her support. Launched by the British Homeopathic Association and Homeopathy Action Trust, the collection shows celebrities with a homeopathic remedy in its natural form painted on their body. Charlotte said, "I'm totally accident prone, and after numerous bumps and bruises, my dad, a doctor, suggested I visited a homeopath for neck pains and migraines. I immediately noticed a huge difference, and from that day on, I've relied on homeopathy for a whole range of health issues and for general well-being too." The campaign, which kicked off in November, saw Charlotte joined by ex-model Jo Wood, Team GB's Louise Hazel actress, Alice Barlow, BBC Three presenter, Stacey Dooley, radio presenter, Janet Lee Grace and model Amal Fashanu, And it shows a photograph of Charlotte with two butterflies painted onto her neck. And then there's Allegra, who lost her locks. A Winchester schoolgirl has cut her hair off for charity with the help of a well-known salon owner. 14-year-old Allegra Whitcomb had 12 inches of her long blonde hair cut off to donate to the Little Princess Trust charity. The charity provides real hair wigs to boys and girls across the UK who have lost their own hair through cancer treatments. The St Swithin's schoolgirl was helped by hairdresser Guy Kramer, who spontaneously donated the cost of her haircut after hearing about the cause. And there's a photograph of Allegra holding a long blonde switch of hair cut from her own hair. But finally, Balgaram says, "Who are you?" If you dish it out, you have to be prepared to take it. Journalists must learn to be thick-skinned and not too precious, which is just as well. When Balgaram spotted the Chronicle had friends in high places on its Facebook page, none other than the Minister for Scotland, Alistair Carmichael, we got him touched to see why he was a fan of the paper. "I don't know," he said. "You sent me a friend request and I said OK." Ouch!
And this one is headed, "Jan bows out after more than 800 births." She has brought more than 800 babies into the world, in some cases three generations of the same family. Now Jan Barnes is to retire after 37 years as a community midwife in Fair Oak, and she says the thought of finishing her working career brings her to tears. Jan, 65, from Colden Common, said, "I just feel so lucky that I've been able to do what I have done. Throughout my career, I have woken up every morning and thought, I love my job. Being a community midwife is like being a part of the family. There is one local family where I have delivered the great-grandmother, grandmother and mother, and they call me their family retainer. It's just lovely." Her career started in February 1967, when she started her training as a nurse. She then went on to work as a staff nurse on the men's ward before completing her midwifery course and began working as a community midwife for Fair Oak and Bishopstoke in 1977. The mother of two and grandmother of one has delivered 800 babies in the Fair Oak community alone, but from February will be sorely missed as she hangs up her uniform. The only regret she has about the way the job has changed is that she can no longer spend as much time with each patient as she used to. Fellow midwife and previous patient, Nikki Hull, 50, from Hedge End, said, "She's just lovely and would do anything for you. She's just such a huge part of this community, and it's sad that she's retiring. As my midwife, Jan was amazing. She was always very direct and told you exactly what you needed to hear. Having worked as a supervisor of midwives for the past 20 years, Jan added, why would you love this job? I'd miss the mums most, that instant love you see when their child is born. And they haven't done anything to deserve it, really. But there is an instant bond which is so special."
And this is Westminster Diary by George Hollingbury, MP for the Meon Valley. He says, "Over the Christmas break, my office received a number of letters and calls about the power cuts in the area. Most just wanted to know when their lights might come back on and if they were going to get to cook their Christmas dinner. But several were full of bile and anger about the electricity companies and their efforts to get the network repaired. Now, if you're in a position of the lady running a care home, whom the Chronicle reported was very worried about the condition of her charges, shout away all you like, as far as I'm concerned. But if you're in no danger and just inconvenienced, I'm not so sure there's quite so much to get angry about. I understand the enormous frustration of losing power at such a special time, but hang on a second. Surely people must have noticed how much damage there had been. Just driving around anywhere in Hampshire, it was blindingly obvious that there were hundreds, if not thousands, of trees down. This has been no normal weather at any case. It took a couple of days just to get all the trees off the roads, for goodness sake. And do you suppose it's possible that the companies might, at the outset at least, have been a little short-staffed but trying their hardest? Or that they had to choose some tasks, like reconnecting a care home, over others? I only raise this because it makes me think a little more widely about how we think about things nowadays. I don't know why things have changed, but we seem to have slipped into a position where we see things in a very narrow way. This issue isn't just about complaints or sound bites, although we do seem to have a culture of instant outrage these days to anything we disagree with. So, for many, immigration is simply a bad thing, despite the fact that almost all analysis shows that the right type and pace of immigration is a good thing. Large companies and their bosses think it's acceptable to pay no tax in the UK, despite the fact that much of the market they exploit is helped by government spending. Building more houses is a blight, even though there's an ever-increasing need because of people living longer and the breakdown of families. I hope you get the picture. All I know is that the world we live in nowadays is more complex, more globalised, more nuanced, and more challenging to deal with than at any time in history. I think we owe it to ourselves and to others to bring a little more of that complexity into how we think about issues.
And this one is Health Trust shake-up on track as public sector have their say. Health chiefs in Winchester have insisted that plans for a major NHS shake-up are on track, despite calls from some experts for greater clarity. The proposals, which could see A&E and maternity units in Winchester downgraded, went out for public engagement last year, and NHS bosses are analysing the response. In December, Mindy Noble, a breastfeeding counsellor and chairman of Hampshire Maternity Services Liaison Committee, called for health chiefs to clarify the options being considered. Mary Edwards, chief executive of Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, said, "We as a hospital are clear that consultant-led hospitals are the way forward, but we are aware it's our decision, but are mindful of what the public want. We think the report is right and agree with its findings. Under the proposals, some specialist services could be centralised and moved away from the Royal Hampshire County Hospital to a new emergency hospital north of the city. As previously reported, Winchester could be left with a walk-in unit for less serious A&E cases and a midwife-led maternity unit for natural births only. At present, about 3,000 women per year give birth at the RHCH, which has had the full range of obstetricians, paediatricians, anaesthetists and midwives." Mrs. Edward added, "The public engagement shows us that most of the public recognise that it's safer and better to have hospitals that specialise." On January the 28th, health chiefs will attend an overview and scrutiny committee at Hampshire County Council to present their response to the public engagement. In February, a formal public consultation process will begin.
This one is headed Chef Alicia in bid to help busy families. A Hampshire woman has started up her own business to tackle obesity by offering to cook meals for busy families. Alicia's story has been cooking for over 11 years and decided to set up her own business, Wicked Whisk, after a friend was struggling to find the time to cook fresh food for her four children. Now, along with the help of her aunt, Anita Milson, Miss Story has been cooking up a storm at Etiquette Cookshop in Oxford to demonstrate easy recipes using the freshest ingredients. With the UK reported to be buying one in three ready meals sold in Europe, and with obesity, diabetes, and many other problems on the increase, and family time on the decrease, I feel it's an issue that needs to be tackled, she said. Miss Dory, 29, of Shepherd's Road in Bartley, in the New Forest, put on a range of demonstrations at her aunt's cookshop on Saturday, cooking gnocchi and chorizo, honeycomb and spinach, chickpea and aubergine curry. "It was really my friend who started me off," she said. "Her kids were fed up with eating frozen mash, so I said I'd cook them a week's worth of meals that they could easily reheat when they were ready. It gave them all a chance to sit down as a family without the hassle, but the food they were eating contained fresh meat and vegetables. I'd never heard of half the stuff she had in her freezer. I want to offer restaurant-style but wholesome favourites to customers at their home. Whether it's for a dinner party or just to relieve a bit of pressure, it's about getting the family back around the table for a healthy, nutritious dinner."
Dorothy's in the swing on her special day. A Winchester woman celebrated in style when she turned 100 years old. Dorothy Haller, who lives at the old parsonage in Otterbourne, was surrounded by family and friends to celebrate her centenary with a glass of sparkling wine and a slice of birthday cake adorned with iced flowers. Mrs. Haller was just 14 when she met her would-be husband, Alec, in Sheffield, where she was born. They married in 1940 and moved to London after the war, before moving to Southampton after Alec was appointed an official receiver in bankruptcy. During this time, they began to play golf and retired to Oliver's Battery to be nearer the Royal Winchester Golf Club. Alec and Dorothy enjoyed 64 years together, and even after her husband's death, Dorothy continued to play golf well into her 90s. Dorothy's daughter, Pam Green, said everyone had a wonderful time at the party. "We also had a 2.5-month-old in the room, so we had the spectrum covered pretty well," she said. She survived all the excitement and enjoyed being surrounded by old neighbours, family and friends. A great-grandmother to two, grandmother to three, and mum to Pamela and Jacqueline, Dorothy has always enjoyed flower arranging, sewing and gardening, and of course golf. And there's a wonderful picture of Dorothy surrounded by friends and family with the 2.5-month-old close to her. Very sprightly she looks. And there's an inset picture of Dorothy with her two daughters raising a glass to the camera.
And this one is primary schools to get £96 million boost. Huge investment in extra places. Primary schools across Hampshire are set for major expansion work after a £96 million cash boost. Education Secretary Michael Gove has announced the windfall to provide hundreds of extra school places in the next 3 years. At least two Hampshire primary schools are set for multi-million pound expansions, with the County Council set to receive £81 million. And a number of primary schools in Southampton will also have their capacities increased after the City Council was awarded £14 million. The news will come as a welcome boost to education chiefs, with primary school pupil numbers set to swell over the next decade. In Hampshire, there are predicted to be 538 more reception-age pupils in 2018 than in 2012, a rise of 3.4%. Test Valley alone is expected to see an increase of 103 pupils, while Eastleigh could see 88 new youngsters attending school. In response to a boom in pupil numbers across the country, Mr. Gove has announced £2.3 billion of funding to create new spaces. Announcing the measure, he said, "The government's overriding priority is to assure every child has a place at school. Demographic pressures have put strain on schools in many parts of the country. That is why we have more than doubled funding for new places to £5 billion in this Parliament. I am announcing an additional £2.35 billion to support local authorities to plan and create new school places that will be needed by 2017. That money will be put into the County and City Council's budgets for school expansion. County education bosses are set to announce the full programme of works later this year." Executive Member for Education, Peter Edgar, said, This is great news for Hampshire, and it shows the confidence in Hampshire as an outstanding council, which will deliver 8,000 new places over the next 3 years. We will carefully analyse each school site, and obviously in most cases this will mean extensions to schools. And there is a joyful photograph of the pupils at Crescent Primary School, Eastleigh, in their red sweatshirts with their hands raised in the air and big beaming smiles, because a £5 million investment at Crescent School will add an extra class to each year group, allowing an extra 210 pupils.
Businesses hit by water mains works. It's a road closure that is giving businesses and drivers alike a headache. Since Colden Commons Main Road closed last Monday for essential water mains work, rush hour motorists have found themselves in massive queues. Journeys that should take 10 minutes are now taking up to an hour. Businesses in the area are also being hit hard as cars are diverted away from the area, leaving pubs in particular with a lack of customers. Others say drivers are using roads to cut through and avoid the long diversion, with single-lane roads becoming rat runs. Now, Southern Water has announced it is curtailing the project by a month to try and limit disruption. As previously reported, Southern Water has closed a section of the B3354 to replace old water mains with a new 1 kilometre section of pipes from the junction with Portsmouth Road to the junction with Church Lane. Initially estimated at 12 weeks, the project should now take 8. Along the route from Fair Oak to Fisher's Pond, there are several signs indicating the road ahead is closed, but very few to indicate that businesses beyond are open. Businesses nearby said they believed drivers thought they were closed because of the signs and were just following the diversion routes before they even reached them. Many said they had not been aware of the closure until signs started going up and had not been consulted. Donald Dunn, supervisor at the Queen's Head pub, would normally serve 20 to 30 couples at lunchtime, but last Thursday they had only 4. "It's pretty dire here, not much trade at all," she said. "A lot of people didn't think we were open." John and Keely Mitchell, who run the Fisher's Pond pub on Main Road, said the first 2 days of the closure, Monday and Tuesday, had probably cost them £3,000. Mr. Mitchell said drivers were being diverted before they reached the pub, and that, as a result, they had cut staff hours. After talks with Southern Water, they managed to get an extra sign put up at the road closure sign near the pub to say the businesses were still open, which has helped. But Mr. Mitchell said signs further away do not give that information. James Piper, 37, of Church Lane, Branbridge, owner of a tree consultancy business, was working on a property on Main Road. He said to get to his yard in Bishop's Waltham, he is having to do a 10-mile detour, and his parents are faced with an hour-and-a-half journey to visit his grandmother instead of 20 minutes. "It's the only artery road in the area, so it's an absolute nightmare," he said.
New homes replace ex-sheltered complex. New houses are to replace a former elderly sheltered accommodation after civic chiefs unanimously agreed planning permission. 11 new houses, ranging in size from 2 bedrooms to a 7-bed, are to replace Wolverston, a building in Berwick Road consisting of 47 studio and 1-bed flats and 2 bungalows. Wolverston has been empty for several years and was temporarily used as a student hostel. Concerns about landscaping were raised by some of the 15 objections submitted, stating any loss of trees could cause lengthy damage to the area's character. The case officer, Jill Lee, said that conditions of the build had been applied to ensure that this did not happen. In this case, landscaping is so important, she said. The site is now very open to Berwick Road, whereas before it was screened. It's very important to get some of the green character back in there. However, some councillors raised the issue of integrating the site with the new community, ensuring no gates would be built and would still remain fairly visible from the adjacent street at Silwood Close. Councillor Ian Tate said, "What are we trying to achieve with the landscaping? I'm just concerned whether there's any value to the screening, so I do hope we're not just trying to change this into a Sleeping Beauty's palace that's hidden away." However, objecting to the site was local resident Karen Barrett, who said the site's landscaping was just one of a large number of problems, arguing the site could be better used. "It doesn't give me much confidence that they take landscaping very seriously if they rip it all out," she said. "I was more concerned about the site itself and the main impact on the area." Ms. Barrett also raised issues with the proposed 3 6-bed and 1 7-bed houses on the land. She said, "How many more millionaires does Winchester want?" Objections did not sway the councillors, though, who agreed to the build. In his summary, Councillor Barry Lipscomb said, "What we have before us today is a proposal by a reputable firm designed by a nationally respected firm of architects, and I cannot see that this will do anything other than make a positive contribution to the area."
And here we have visiting limited as sickness bug lingers. 3 Hampshire hospitals confirmed they will carry on restricting visiting hours following reports of suspected cases of norovirus. Officials at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, Andover War Memorial Hospital and Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, all run by the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Trust, have restricted visiting hours to patients since the outbreak on December the 20th. Patients were unable to see loved ones for any more than an hour during Christmas and the New Year, following cases of sickness and diarrhoea, as all wards at the 3 hospitals only allowed visitors between 6:30 and 7:30 p.m. Many sick and injured people had spent the best part of the festive period alone as a result. The situation will be reviewed again shortly, and the maternity ward has rescheduled its visiting hours to 3:30 to 4:30 p.m. Children and the elderly are advised to steer clear of the hospital grounds, and anyone who has experienced flu-like symptoms or diarrhoea and vomiting is asked to avoid going to the hospital at all.
£6 million boost for business startups. Winchester civic chiefs are looking to invest £6 million in boosting start-up businesses across the district. The City Council has set aside the 7-figure sum to buy property from which to launch at least one enterprise centre, with the potential to support an estimated 100 to 200 jobs. The initiative aims to help new businesses establish themselves before moving on after at most 18 months, thus freeing up space for new ones. One potential building that has been ruled out is Avalon House, the former council planning office that has been empty for more than 5 years. It is due to be let for health-related use. City Councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder for finance, said, "We are looking at opportunities to buy properties in Winchester or elsewhere, such as Alsford or Bishop's Waltham. We would make them available as small start-up centres to encourage enterprise on short leases on favourable terms to help grow their business, a kind of incubator." He said the background was the need to ensure Winchester retained a diverse economy and does not become a dormitory town for the retired or commuters. Councillor Godfrey added, "We need to make sure that high-quality employment is attracted to Winchester, money is generated and spent locally. There will be more business raids, and people do not have to commute elsewhere. It will give us more sustainability, so the next time there is an economic downturn, more firms will survive. We are trying to make sure Winchester does not become just a heritage centre stuck in Aspic.
Jane's ring comes home. A ring once owned by Jane Austen, which was sold to United States singer Kelly Clarkson, is set to go on display for the first time at a Hampshire museum. It comes after the Jane Austen House Museum in Chawton raised more than £150,000 to buy it back from the former American Idol winner. Ms. Clarkson bought it at an auction last year, but she was prevented from taking it out of the United Kingdom when it became subject to a temporary export ban. Now the gold and turquoise ring will go on display at the museum from February the 14th. Curator of the Jane Austen House Museum, Mary Guyot, said, "Visitors come from all around the world to see the house where she once lived, and we will now take great pleasure in displaying this pretty ring. The government's decision to decline an export licence, preventing removal of the ring from the United Kingdom, reflects how rarely Jane Austen's personal effects turn up in today's art market, and we are thrilled to have had this second chance to bring it home to Chawton." And there's a picture below of the ring, gold and turquoise, and it's very, very pretty.
And this is Documentary Examines Alfred Mystery. A leading academic has cast doubt on the search for the remains of King Alfred the Great in Winchester, saying that the results are likely to prove inconclusive. A BBC Two documentary is attempting to identify bones exhumed from an unmarked Winchester grave. It is due to be shown next Tuesday, January the 21st, on BBC Two at 9 p.m. The search for King Alfred the Great will be presented by Neil Oliver. The search for the remains of the Anglo-Saxon king comes after a Channel 4 documentary featured the discovery of Richard III's remains beneath a Leicester car park. Edward Fennell, who is involved in the Alfred Project with the Hyde 900 community group, said that the documentary was not jumping on a bandwagon. "We commenced the search for Alfred a long time before the publicity about Richard III hit," he told the Radio Times. "Some people in the area had done research and were emotionally convinced that the remains were Alfred's. Circumstantial evidence said it might be possible. It was definitely worth investigating," said Mr. Fennell of Egbert Road, Hyde. "Those involved in the exhumation have signed non-disclosure contracts, meaning that they cannot reveal whether the bones dug up really are those of the 9th century monarch. Neither are they allowed to publicly discuss the issue with the Hampshire Chronicle." But academic Dr. Charles West, a lecturer in medieval history at the University of Sheffield, was sceptical that DNA testing would provide a conclusive result. "Alfred is buried with his son Edward, and I don't think they will be able to distinguish between their bones," he told the magazine.
In at deep end for Zach. To swim 100 miles in just 100 days would be a stretch for most, but one Winchester woman had all the motivation she needed to do just that, to help her nephew. 10-year-old Zach Giles of St. Peter Street, Bishop's Waltham, was diagnosed with leukemia last June and has been courageously battling his way through chemotherapy ever since. And with the help of his aunt, Emma Giles, he's getting all the support he needs. Ms. Giles, 44, of Bar End Road, said, "It's the one sport I can do well, and I do quite regularly, so I thought I'd try doing 100 miles in 100 days because I wanted to do something for Zach. I obviously didn't give too much thought to what I was getting myself into, because when I tell people what I'm doing, most people think I'm balmy. Zach, who hopes to join his friends at Bishop's Waltham Junior School, ready for the next academic year, said, "I'm really proud of my aunt for doing so well." Miss Giles hopes to raise close to £3,000 for the Magic Wand Appeal, a charity raising funds to improve the children's unit at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and at the P.M. Brown Ward at Southampton General Hospital, where Zach has been receiving treatment. She was spurred on by her brother Guy, 41, Zach's dad, as well as his mum, Dawn, 42, and his little sister, Amelia, aged 8, when Emma swam over 22 miles last Saturday. Dawn said, "Zach has been really brilliant and has put everything he's got into getting better. He sat there watching his aunt swim, wishing he could just get in with her and join in the fun. It's a really important cause, and there's so many other families going through this, and we would urge anyone considering donating blood or bone marrow to look into it, because it really does save lives."
MP backs plans to support Hindu culture. Winchester MP Steve Brine has helped set up a parliamentary group promoting the interests of British Hindus. Mr. Brine represents a large Hindu constituency, particularly in Hiltingbury and Chandler's Ford, and will use the cross-party group to raise issues and celebrate Hindu culture. He said, "A group of us have been working towards the creation of a strong forum for British Hindus to interact with Parliament since being elected, so I'm delighted that this cross-party group has now formed and is receiving a lot of support across the board. We look forward to hosting a lively programme of discussions and events which will provide a platform for the Hindu community to positively engage and find its voice within our political system." He added, "I would urge all local Hindus to be in touch with me so I can better represent them in Parliament." The group is chaired by Conservative MP Bob Blackman and will be supported by the Hindu Lawyers Association. Hampshire Puja and Cultural Association, which organises annual Hiltingbury Durga Puja festivals, a Hindu autumn event, welcome the news. Spokesman Madhu Akaria said, "We want to share our community with all other peoples, irrespective of religion, and that is why our group is an organisation for everyone. We hope all mankind will benefit from any decisions taken by this parliamentary group." According to the 2011 census, there are more than 12,300 Hindus in Hampshire, 0.7% of the total population. And I apologise if I've mispronounced the names.
And this is end of an era as association is wound up. Residents group shuts after 40 years. Winchester City Residents Association has been wound up because of rapidly falling membership. The association has been disbanded after some 40 years, despite members voting to carry on with its work at their last annual general meeting. However, the organisation has been unable to recruit new blood, meaning the workload was falling on an ever-dwindling number of people. Chairman John Thomas called a special meeting last Thursday, attended by 22 people, many of whom had been members for more than 20 years. Mr. Thomas took the opportunity to pay a special tribute to one of the founding members and former chairman, Alan Weeks, who died in 2010. He said, "He was the one who got me into the association in 1991, and he had this tremendous love of the city, and he was absolutely dedicated to the interests of the residents of Winchester. He seemed to spend his whole life attending council meetings and drafting letters, and I suppose also being a pain to the local administration. Sometimes when he stood up, there was a groan from the council." Former committee member Annette Lodge recalled previous demonstrations carried out by Mr. Weeks and the former member Chris Gillam, who formed part of the protests against such historic planning projects as the M3 through the Water Meadows in the 1970s, the motorway extension at Twyford Down in the 1990s, and more recently, the controversial Barton Farm development. She said, "It's such a shame, really, considering their achievements. I think it's a problem with lots of the younger generation, because so much is done through Facebook and people don't join things as much as they used to. People don't seem to want to do the kind of footwork that's needed nowadays."
Audio bus stop announcements. A bus company is spending thousands of pounds to give visually impaired passengers a helping hand. Eastleigh-based Blue Star has introduced automated audio announcements to tell passengers which stop the bus is approaching. This is designed to help them and other passengers new to the area. The system has been installed on all the single and double-decker buses at a cost of £1,000 per bus. It uses GPS satellite navigation to know where the bus is, and the appropriate voice file is activated as the bus approaches the stop.
City will maintain council tax grants. Civic chiefs say a grant paid to parish councils by the city will not be reduced despite government cuts. The government's council tax reduction scheme means poorer residents can receive up to 100% off their council tax. Central government then provides money to the city council to compensate for these reductions. That was £150,000 last year. And the money can be distributed to parishes. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, Winchester's financial chief, said there had been a reduction of 14% in funding for 2014-15, but the council will be able to mitigate the cuts. Unless the situation changes, we will maintain the distribution of the full and original grant in roughly the same proportions as we did last year, he said.
I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 17th of January 2014. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Jean Gardner and Irene Dowding. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Northrop Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with the laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.